Sometimes just to get a little away for a little while helps.
Hello, the E12 Finance Division Committee will come to order. Today is Tuesday, April 2nd, 2013. Before us is Senate File 711, Achievement and Integration Aid Program, Senator Torres-Ray. Welcome, Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. I am delighted to be back and with a lot of energy, like most of you, after a good break with our family. So happy to be back and have this opportunity to present this bill before the committee. And members, I would like to provide a brief overview of the policy provisions in this bill, because I think they are very relevant, and obviously, Mr. Chair, please let me know how much time I have and how in-depth you want me to go into the policy. I know that many members in this committee are also members of the policy committee, but there are some that have not had the opportunity to review this policy. So if you allow me to do this, Mr. Chairman, I would like to briefly review the policy provisions and then move into reviewing some of the fiscal notes that are important to this committee, and call testifiers to provide you with an overview of their kind of recommendations for moving forward with the fiscal recommendations.
Okay, we've got a plan.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So members, Senate File 711 really proposes to embark into a new direction for achievement and integration in Minnesota, and to really look into how we not only we fund integration, but also how we attach some policy provisions that put accountability into this program and put a new direction. So Section 1, the subdivision 1 establishes the achievement and integration for Minnesota as a program that promotes diversity, pursuing racial and economic integration, increasing academic achievement, and equitable educational opportunities. It directs the districts to use revenue to pursue a couple of things. One, school educational practices and integrated learning environments, and two, corresponding and meaningful policies and curricula, and trained instructors, administrators, school counselors, and other advocates to support and enhance in-school practices and learning environments. Subdivision 2 lists the plan components, which requires that an eligible school district to develop a long-term comprehensive plan, which could include innovative and integrative pre-kindergarten through 12 to grade 12 learning environments that offer school enrollment choices, family engagement initiatives, professional development opportunities for teachers and administrators, and increased programmatic opportunities that focus on rigor and college and career readiness for underserved populations. Subdivision 3 describes the report for progress and budget process, which requires a school board to hold a public hearing to report the progress in realizing the goals identified in the plan. The board also needs to identify a process to provide longitudinal data demonstrating the progress in reducing the disparity in student academic achievement among all racial and ethnic categories of students. This plan must be submitted to the commissioner, and it will be serve as the instrument for which we approve or disapprove the budget. And then Subdivision 4 speaks to the evaluation process, which requires the commissioner to do evaluation of efficacy in the district's plans and reports findings to the legislature. Section 2, Achievement and Integration Revenue.
Excuse me, Senator Torres-Ray.
Yes,
we
Senator.
Recognize there were a couple of changes made in policy. I don't have the engrossed copy. I believe we're going to get that language so that other changes are also reflected. So, yes, when as soon as we get that, that'll be distributed.
Thank you, Senator.
Please proceed.
Appreciate that. I am also trying to figure out if I have in my in my brief overview if that incorporates all of that, but I think it will be very important that the committee receives the actual copy with the amendments that were incorporated in the policy committee.
Thank you.
So the section that we'll be reviewing today closely is the Achievement and Integration Revenue. Subdivision 1 describes eligibility, which clearly puts out the district's different portions for eligibility and as approved by the department. And Subdivision 2 establishes the formula for achievement and integration, allowing for some revenue to be transferred to the Department of Education for oversight and accountability activities. I think that's an important issue, members. As we move forward, I realized as I move forward in our policy committee that seldom times we provide the resources to the department to really conduct oversight and bring those reports forward to us so that we can review, you know, how the districts are implementing the laws that are in the books. Subdivision 3, Achievement and Integration Aid, establishes the district aid as a 70% of its achievement and integration revenue. Members, I want to make sure that you know that we're going to hear several presentations today as to, you know, how this formula could be established and what are the implications for the different districts, but it will be up to this committee to decide how we move forward after you establish a target. Subdivision 4, Achievement and Integration Levy, which establishes a district levy as the difference between its revenue and its aids. Subdivision 5 is the incentive revenue, establishes an eligible district maximum incentive aid. District receives revenue and implements a voluntary plan to reduce racial enrollment disparities. Subdivision 6 is a reserve revenue and requires the revenue to be reserved and used for authorized programs under Subdivision 7. And Subdivision 7 revenue uses requires at least 80% of the district's revenue received under this section to be used for innovative and integrated integrated learning activities, family engagement activities, and other approved programs providing direct services to students, and then 20% of the revenue for professional development. So that's basically, members, what we intend to present. And as I said, it will be we will hear from different testifiers today, as well as hopefully the department about, you know, the different proposals that are kind of being presented to us, and then Mr. Chair, it will be up to you and the committee to decide what the target is. So we have in the list, I have four individuals, Mr. Chair and members, who wish to testify. I have Shana Olabaju, who is the coordinator for Education Equity and Integration for Minneapolis. Please. And Jackie Turner, who is the Chief Engagement Officer for St. Paul. Dorothy Vialki, Executive Director for Northwest Suburban Integration School District. And Bob Erickson, School Board Member for Lakeville, Area Schools. And Linda Madsen from Forest School, Forest Lake Superintendent. So, Shana and Jackie.
Okay, and welcome to each of the testifiers, and please state your name for the tape. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, good afternoon now. I guess we've hit that afternoon mark.
Yes.
I bring you greetings from Minneapolis Public Schools. My name is Shana Moses, probably listed in your packets as Shana Olagbaju. I currently serve as the coordinator for educational equity and integration for the Minneapolis Public School District. And I would like to, I'm here to testify in support of and in favor of SF 711. And as I did before, I want to share a little bit about my lens towards this particular proposed piece here. I come to you I want to speak kind of from the personal lens and the professional lens as well. Coming to you as the first-generation Minnesotan, okay, the product of African-American parents from Louisiana who came to Minnesota in the mid-60s in search of opportunities, namely job opportunities and a good education for their soon-to-be-birthed family. I'm also a product of Minneapolis Public Schools and a beneficiary of an interracial and interethnic and blended socioeconomic educational experience. And that was afforded to me during one of the waves of integration within the history of Minneapolis Public School District as well. So I shared with others before, I am proud to be a Louisiana root and Minnesota fruit coming to this work here. Yeah. And I also come to you as a practitioner, having worked in educational and equity and this area of integration for about 10 years, with experience both within first ring, second ring, and now suburbs, and now, of course, the Minneapolis Public Schools experience. Probably one thing that's integral to me, too, with my lens is being a parent of Minneapolis Public School students. I have two students of three. In the district, and I'm quite clear that all of these experiences have shaped my lens in terms of the value of intentionally providing integrated learning options as an option for students and their families, particularly with an emphasis on the need to rigorously raise the achievement of all of our Minnesota students while disrupting the racial predictability of achievement and those disparities that we've heard a little bit about today. I want to emphasize three points to you today in favor of SF 711. Certainly, first, I believe there is definitely compelling state interest in the creation and establishment of integrated learning environments for all of our students. Our national research supports the premise that this integration benefits the academic attainment of students of color. With a little bit of research, integrated schools often provide students of color with greater access to information resources and informal social networks that can lead to college aspirations, acceptance, and attendance. I also want to emphasize that African-American and white students who attend integrated schools are said to be more likely to have friends from a racial group other than their own, more likely to work in integrated workplaces effectively, and more likely to live in integrated neighborhoods. Okay. The second point I want to just emphasize to you today is around these recommendations is the beauty of them being a bipartisan and thoughtful process. The task force recommendations certainly emphasize and birth some very inclusive deliberations, probably some of the strongest that we've seen with integration policy in our past 30 years. If we just think about the fact that merely 30 years ago, Minneapolis was released from court supervision of our integration plan. Since then, Supreme Court decisions, our state rules, and demographic changes across the state have changed the face of integration policy and practice in the state. This legislation provides some much-needed update to state integration policy and finance as well. And it's no secret in terms of how the demographics of Minneapolis Public Schools has changed since that time, now with nearly 68% to 70% students of color within our district. We've seen a shift that warrants a shift in our policy and finance, too. Third, the current law sunset of integration revenue, while retaining the integration rule and mandate to create opportunities to foster increased interracial contacts and close the achievement gap or opportunity gap, places the state in jeopardy. A clearly enunciated mandate, absent any finance mechanism, really invites scrutiny. Okay. The adoption of this bill, though, does state a clear policy and finance mechanism in support of integrated learning environments. One thing that was staying with me, I heard Senator Torres Ray talk about the pieces of accountability that are also embedded within this new recommendation, and I just wanted to add and emphasize that this is something that we are growing with and taking more strides towards accountability with the use of our own integration dollars in Minneapolis public schools. One of the ways that we're doing that is through integration program reports that we expect those of our recipients of integration dollars to use. And I just want to emphasize that those program reports ask specifically about goals, of course, strategies, and also evaluation metrics as a means to see what the program outcomes are over time for those programs and schools receiving integration dollars. Namely, within the program report, we also ask for what are the successes, what are the promising practices, what are the challenges in their pursuit to adhere to the two pieces of the integration goals, closing the achievement gap and creating that increased interracial interaction. And so we're very proud of our new process that we have unfolded during 2012-2013 academic year, and I'm confident that this sort of reporting will help to move towards those pieces of accountability so that we can be more transparent on a state level, too, in terms of the use of dollars. And I think this will provide a nice opportunity for some things that are truly making the impact that we're looking for to rise to the top in terms of the best use of the integration dollars. I thank you for your time.
And thank you very much. And we'll hold on questions until all the testifiers have presented. And okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I am Jackie Turner, and I am the Service Chief Engagement Officer in the St. Paul Public Schools. And I, too, am speaking here today in support of integration revenue to continue. I want to step back for a minute also and speak to my background and what I've worked in. I've been working in school choice and working with integration for 12 plus years and see the benefits of integration funding being able to support school districts, not only Minneapolis and St. Paul, but both East Metro and West Metro school districts. The benefit of what integration is able to do is remarkable. Regardless of what my practice has seen and my experience has seen, working with so many families, talking to families of all different ethnicities, both white, African-American, Latino, Somali, regardless of the case, is that all families agree that all students benefit when there is a diversity and an integration of students at schools, and not only at schools, but within classrooms. And what we often see and what data will show is that any time a particular school or site gets to be close to 40% to 50% of any one ethnicity, regardless of what that ethnicity is, regardless if it's white, African-American, primarily Latino, Somali, regardless of what it is, there begins to be students and families who will leave. And what our data will also show is that whenever you're able to keep schools at a equitable amount of students coming from all different ethnicities, races, languages, and backgrounds, that all families and students benefit, both economically, socially, academically, as well as we see the benefits of students benefiting from moving on to post-secondary. We often hear in St. Paul, and I'm sure likewise other school districts, that our students in Minnesota head off to college much more apt to be able to socialize and network with other students from other ethnicities because of their experience both in Minneapolis and St. Paul. They've had the ability of sitting next to students that speak multiple languages, both in the classroom as well in the lunchroom or on the playground, and that all benefits all of us. We are at St. Paul Public Schools is definitely in support of continuing the funding. Where we see our greatest benefit of the integration funding is when we're able to offer families truly a choice. As you know, that oftentimes our families don't live, our communities physically housing and aren't in integrated communities. Oftentimes they're in segregated communities. And most often the only time that children are able to be able to access integrated communities is in schools. We live in segregated communities. We often attend faith church and mosque and others in segregated communities. And the schools are the one where we have that opportunity to bring students and families together in an integrated setting. Without this funding, we would not be able to continue our busing of families to integrated schools. We've seen some of our greatest success, both academically with reducing the achievement gap, as well as offering high-quality programs for all students. At our magnet programs, our most successful magnet programs have been our immersion programs, where we continue to see diversity within white, African-American, as well as bilingual students. Most of our immersion programs are all about 30% across the board, so when you look at our different demographics. We also see it in our very high-performing Montessori programs, programs that attract both white families and families of color, and we're able to continue to offer high-quality program. So how we're continuing to use the dollars in St. Paul is being able to increase the amount of capacity that we are seeing at our successful schools, where they're both integrated and have a high-quality program, and that's the best situation you can be in. And we're also using our money wisely by eliminating or closing schools that are ineffective, or quite honestly, where we see not as much integration in those particular schools. In addition, in St. Paul, we support the notion of accountability and using the money wisely and using the money in its intended focus. The one of the things that St. Paul Public Schools has recently instilled in our choice system is something that we're calling Reflecting St. Paul, because we believe all of our schools should reflect our great city. If you look at our city as a whole, we are actually quite diverse as a city, although sometimes families don't necessarily always choose to attend schools that are as diverse. So one of the things that we've done recently in St. Paul is to implement what we're calling Reflecting St. Paul. So we are giving and reserving seats at some of our schools that are low poverty. And oftentimes low poverty also equates to where there's not much diversity as well. That's primarily white schools. And we are reserving seats at those particular schools to allow for families of color that choose to attend those particular schools and continue to offer busing within those schools. Already this year, with very little advertisement, and we have over 600 families within St. Paul Public Schools that has requested that option to attend schools that are less diverse, but at the same time, those students that are there will also benefit from the students that are coming from other neighborhoods who are will provide more diversity within those particular schools. We are also believe that if you're going to truly offer families choice, you have to be able to have a system that supports that, that is able to advertise it and promote that. I think that's what was passed out earlier as a example of our current year choice guide, which you will see offers families on average of 15 different choice options that they can choose from that we believe are quite integrated, as well as array of arts options, Montessori, and language options that all families can choose from and feel that they can benefit from both academically. And the last piece I'd like to just hit on is that we believe in equity in St. Paul, and equity is not equal. So we believe that we need, in order to be able to offer all of our program, all of our families, an equitable amount of education or high achievement education, is not just by offering a Montessori program in one neighborhood and an arts program in another neighborhood, that those programs have to be equitable in its form of offering high-quality education. And those are the things that we are use our integration funds for in St. Paul, and it's what we're continuing to support our funds for. And I'll end at this particular time and remain open for questions after the last testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Turner. And our next testifier, I believe, is Dorothy Bialke. And again, members, following the testimony, we'll open for questions. And I believe Bob Erickson will follow Dorothy. And Bob, if you want to approach, you're welcome to as well. And if any of the subsequent testifiers have handouts that have not been made available to us yet, please do that to help facilitate the meeting. We'll do an audio-visual check there. I think it may need an adjustment.
That's good news.
Well, welcome, Ms. Bielke.
Thank you. My name is Dorothy Bielke, and I'm the Executive Director of Northwest Suburban Integration School District. Our collaborative, I see they have the end of my PowerPoint, so I'm going to go to the beginning.
And Ms. Bielke, is there a handout that you
yes.
have for us as well?
Yeah, you should be receiving two handouts. One is my PowerPoint, and then a second is just an additional fact sheet about Northwest Suburban and our work.
Okay, thank you.
As I said, I represent Northwest Suburban Integration School District. We are 8 school districts along the Northwest Suburban area of Minneapolis and St. Paul. We comprise of Anoka-Hennepin, Brooklyn Center, Osseo, Fridley, Moundsview, Rockford, Buffalo-Hanover-Montrose, and Elk River School District. And I see they don't have quite the right, they have a previous piece in here, so I'm going to hold on just a little second. And then if you can see the second slide that you have on your document, is the little map of Northwest Suburban. I'd like to share just a little bit of the history as to why we were formed in 2001. At that point, Brooklyn Center Area School District and Osseo Area School Districts were identified as being racially isolated. In other words, they had 20% higher students of color than their neighboring school districts. So under the desegregation rule of Minnesota, they were required to form a collaborative with all districts that physically touched those school districts. So that created the formation of a 7 school district integration district: Anoka-Hennepin, Elk River, Buffalo-Hanover, Montrose, and Rockford and Fridley were the ones who were encouraged or required, I should say, to join the collaborative to use integration dollars to create innovative and integrated learning environments. Later on, the idea of academic achievement was added into the integration rule. Along the way, Moundsview petitioned to join our collaborative, so we now have 8 school districts, and Fridley has become a racially isolated district itself. So in our 8 district collaboratives, we have 3 racially isolated school districts and 5 that are not racially isolated, but we all work collaboratively to support the needs of all 8 school districts. We are currently accountable to the state of Minnesota in that each March, we at Northwest Suburban and each eight of the 8 school districts must submit a plan and a budget to MDE. And so we've done that in this past May or March. And like this committee, our main goal is student achievement. However, we also work very hard on our other goals of integrated learning environments, access to opportunity, and especially post-secondary success and planning for our students. One of the main ways we at Northwest use our integration funding is our magnet schools. We have 22 magnet schools, and they're locally controlled, and that means they are run by their home school district. There's 3 themes for these magnet schools: the arts, international baccalaureate, and STEM, or science, technology, engineering, and math. And just over 12,575 students are enrolled in these magnet schools. 48% of those are students of color, and just over 4,000 of them are enrolled through Northwest Suburban School Choice. In other words, they're not their neighborhood schools, and parents have applied for their students to go outside of their home attendance area, can be in a different district or across their home district, to attend one of our 22 magnet schools. These, as I said, are our largest beneficiary of integration funding. At Northwest, we use the funding to coordinate the applications, transportation, quality control, and also coordination across the magnet program and personnel. And I'd like you to understand that this is also impacting student mobility, because if a student starts at a magnet school, as long as they live anywhere within the 8 district collaborative, their district continue, or their transportation will continue, so they do not have to change schools. Even though they might move every 6 months, they can still continue their education for the duration of that school. At the local district level, they use integration funding for specialized materials, resources, and leadership and training that's unique to the magnet programming. As I said, one of our other goals is student achievement, and one way we help monitor this is at Northwest Suburban, we create and track MCE data over 5 years, showing charts based on ethnicity and gender. We watch for overall trends, and we look for gap closing. We try to identify best practices that are happening in one or few of, or in a few of our schools and share that with other schools across our collaborative. We utilize these results to set goals for program enhancement and different goal settings, and they're used by us at Northwest Suburban and at the district levels by their superintendents, their principals, and other magnet leaders. I have in here for you some larger examples of a few data pieces, and they're a little bigger later on in your packet because I know it's hard to see in the little. And we do this for all 22 of our schools, and I just brought three just to give you a highlight of what we're looking at in our data. There is lots of data on these that I will not go into. I'm just going to give you a little overview of how to look at them and then just some of the progress we're making in student achievement. And so we'll start with Anoka Middle School. It's an arts middle school for grades 6 through 8 in the Anoka-Hennepin School District. For each school, we start off by showing their demographics. So you'll see four groups of five-year trends. The first one.
Ms. Bielke, am I the only one that can't read these numbers?
That's what I said. If you flip a little farther later on, you'll have them much bigger. Just go. Keep going towards the end. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So the first group is Anoka Middle School, and then the second grouping of five would be Anoka-Hennepin School District's demographic breakdown, and then the fourth group is all of Northwest Suburban, so the 8 District Collaborative, and then the final group is for the state of Minnesota. Then if we look at their science scores, and this is only for 8th grade, since 8th graders are the only ones who are tested with MCAs in the middle school, you'll see, again, much data, but there's 7 groups of 5-year data across the bottom. And the first group is for ELL students. The second data set is for special education students. The third group is for free and reduced lunch price students. The fourth group is all of Anoka Middle School. The fifth grouping is all of Anoka-Hennepin School District. The sixth grouping is all of Northwest Suburban Collaborative. And the last grouping is for the state of Minnesota. So what do we look for? And if for this one and for the remaining schools, excuse me, I'll concentrate on the middle grouping of data, which is the school itself, and then the seventh group of data, which is the state of Minnesota. And if you look in each of the racial breakdown groups, you'll see that they score higher than the state, their district, and the Northwest Suburban Collaborative. We see overall trending up, so overall growth, and we also see a trend of closing and achieve some of the achievement gaps. We look at our next school, which is Fridley Middle School, which is an IB middle school for grades 5 through 8. You'll see that they're 42% students of color. For Fridley Middle School, then, if we look at their reading, so all grades are tested, grades 5 through 8 are tested in reading. This is for all their students. Again, we'll just concentrate on the middle group, which is the fourth group of data and the seventh group of data. The middle group is Fridley Middle School. They're overall trending up. Most subgroups are scoring higher than the state, and they're also making progress in closing the achievement gap, especially with their black students. And the last school for you today is Monroe Elementary School, which is a STEM elementary school for grades K to 5, and they have 55% students of color. If we look at their math scores, you can see the overall trends up, that essentially they've closed the gap amongst their white students and all their ethnicities, especially their black and Asian students, which are their highest percentage. And all groups scored higher than the state averages.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, that's great. It's awesome news. Thank you.
Yes.
I'll pass it on to them. as I said, Northwest is a collaborative, and our districts really work together and believe in the collaborative aspect. Each of these districts, we have from the largest in the state in Okehennepin to some of the smallest, like Fridley, Brooklyn Center, and Rockford. They value what the collaborative brings to them. Our smallest districts are able to utilize our services because they're a part of our collaborative, and it's cost-effective for them to join in. Our larger districts, while they might be able to replicate some of our work on their own, they value the collaborative piece and that there's different people coming in to help service the needs of their students with a different perspective that really broadens the work that they're doing in their districts. We have regular meetings with our superintendents and our magnet personnel. In the area of accountability, we have a magnet reflection and review process for all 22 of our schools that happens every other year where there is a rubric and they self-evaluate. Then a team from outside, which includes Northwest Suburban and other members, comes in and looks at their school and also uses the same rubric to evaluate how they're doing. From this process, the schools then have ideas of how to further develop their programming, enhance their instruction, and improve their quality of education for their students. Our IB schools are also accountable to the World IB Organization, and as I shared with you a little bit ago, we do track the MCA data for them. We have program supports for the students in which programs such as AVID, Advanced Via Individual Determination, JAG, which is Jobs for America's Graduate, and we also have a student leadership conference. This year it's on Thursday at Earl Brown Convention Center in Brooklyn Center. We'll have about 500 students who belong to the Future Educators Clubs, which is clubs in our high schools that encourage students of color to join educational careers once they finish high school. And AVID students and JAG students will come together for a full day of workshops and competitions that are relevant to their programming. They could be participating in mock job interviews. They could be graded on lesson plan writings, creating storybooks, and the like. It's a pretty exciting day. We have professional development that we offer in magnet programming and with theme collaboration. And we also have multicultural resources and trainings for how to work with families, all families, no matter if they're recent immigrants or if they've been in the United States for a long time, but especially helping our recent immigrants learn how to maneuver through the K-12 educational program. We have family and community engagement programming. We have after-school mentorship programming for latchkey children. We have helped create programs for them in their local apartment complexes with community organizations coming in and helping with homework and enrichment activities. And we also work with our school districts to identify parents who are not represented in their parent leadership groups and help train them so that those families can also be school leaders. And your handout, I just have two more pieces that didn't make it into the PowerPoint in front of you. But I just want you to think about the future considerations with funding. First of all, the local levy, which funds 30% of current integration funding, is set to sunset at the end of 2013. So what that means right away is for all of our school districts, if it's not reinstated, they will lose 30% of their integration funding. And one nice piece about this is it's the local levy. So it puts a local level of accountability onto the school districts to utilize that funding for impactful, positive integration programming in their own communities. And one other piece I want you to think about is the funding. As we go forward, the funding formula has changed, or it's proposed to being changed if it continues. And so when we at Northwest Suburban Collaborative looked at our overall funding, it's about the same amount coming to the whole 8 districts. It's coming in a different percentage than what it currently is. And as Mr. Erickson, I think, is going to share with you, the total number of students in the state that receive integration funding is just over 172,000. We have 96,000 of them in our collaborative. So we see that if integration funding continues, we'll have about the same amount, and we as 9 leaders, myself and the 8 superintendents, all have come to an agreement of how to rearrange the funding that comes into Northwest Suburban to support these important programming. And that's taking into consideration our three racially isolated districts receiving the new funding formula amount. But then the remaining 5 school districts receiving at a 90% of what their current funding level is. And that was at the governor's proposal of the 90%. We've seen different values of what that might be for that will impact those five districts. But I just want you to think about how helping out the districts that were asked 12 years ago or were told 12 years ago to come to the table and do some positive work to help students, how it will be impacted if now 12 years later when we have some very positive programming that funding starts dissipating. So that's what I have for you today. I want to thank you. I hope you understand a little bit more about how Northwest Suburban Anyways uses our integration funding and the positive impact it is having on our students.
Thank you. I'm sure Thursday's event that you refer to will be really exciting.
Yep, it'll be fun. Thank you.
And our next testifier is Bob Erickson, Lakeville Area Schools, a school board member, task force member, and I believe, Mr. Erickson, this will be the third time I've heard you. We had a joint House-Senate committee presentation, and then in the policy, and we're back for more. So welcome back to our committee.
Chair Weiger, members of the Senate Finance Committee, Education Finance Committee, it's a pleasure to be back before you. And in the interest of time, and I want to respect the time that is available today for members to ask questions, I'll just give a brief overview. I had previously presented a PowerPoint, as you may recall, at your joint Finance Committee meeting. And this is the seventh time I've testified on behalf of this legislation between the House and the Senate. And I've really welcomed that opportunity on behalf of the task force, which I was a member. And I see we have a guest with us today. Representative Mariani was also a member of that task force. I appreciate his presence today and the contributions that he made during our process, which evolved, as you may recall, from the fall of 11 through the spring of 12. And we presented our recommendations, which you have in your packets, from the task force. I'm also on the legislative committee of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and I'm representing their platform position on this matter today. They represent 38 school district entities, and the association in representing those 38, 35 are school districts, three are integration districts. And they serve in their capacity as representing the interests of students. Over 50% of the students in the public school systems in Minnesota. You know, research shows that students in integrative settings have a greater chance for success than students in segregated schools and classrooms. To ensure integrated and equitable learning opportunities and to increase achievement for all students, we're on behalf of the task force, on behalf of the AMSD and the school district that I serve, we would certainly welcome your support of the recommendations of the Integration Revenue Replacement Task Force. As you are well aware, the process evolved in large measure due to the Legislative Audit Commission's findings back in November of 2005. And I'm confident that that prompted the task force to be created, the work that we completed, and now your consideration of the work that the task force performed and the recommendations that are before you. I think the key of that audit work by Mr. Nobles, the legislative auditor, can best be summed up in the paragraph in the cover letter that he sent out to the legislature at that time. Mr. Nobles stated, "We found that state law does not set a clear purpose for the program, and as a result, school districts spend integration revenue on a wide range of activities. To achieve measurable results and greater accountability, we think the program's purpose and expenditure should be more focused. We also recommend that the Department of Education's oversight authority be strengthened and the program's funding formula reformed." I'll speak to those that last statement in my comments. The Integration Revenue Replacement Advisory Task Force, 12 members, half which were appointed by Republican leadership, half which were appointed by the commissioner, convened, and we did our work in a timely manner. We received presentations from 41 different groups, the first of which was the responsible party from the legislative auditor's office, followed by Dr. Melcher, giving an overview on finances, and then a myriad of expert testimony from the state of Minnesota and beyond that we learned and accepted and appreciated the work that the presenters had provided. The task force recommendations are rather succinct. The first is create the achievement and integration for Minnesota, the acronym of AIM. So that was after the work that the task force pursued and then finally completed, we established that acronym, and what's before you in the bill is the legislation which would create and establish achievement and integration for Minnesota. Ensure accountability and oversight. And you're probably aware, Dr. Parks is in our midst today. She's the single one FTE that oversees the integration funding and budgeting for 131 school districts serving 172,685 students statewide, one FTE. And as I indicated to you from the legislative auditor, we were aware as a task force of the need to strengthen that process internally, and we're willing to give up 0.2% of our funding, the 131 districts, or $200,000 to provide additional staffing so that the accountability and the measurement of the important budget and plan integration plans are reviewed carefully and follow with the recommendations that are contained in the legislation before you, Senate File 711, authored by Senator Torres Ray. A clear focus and defined limited uses of AIM would be to submit the plans, develop measurable goals, and budgets as I referred to. They would include the following areas: innovative and integrated learning environments, family engagement, professional development, access to opportunity, increase the diversity of teachers and administrators. The fiscal principles for the recommendation that's before you and is incorporated in Senate File 711 are: number one, we did not recommend an increase in expenditures. We were comfortable as a task force to contain the current level of funding, which the previous biennium would be $68 million. That would be the state's portion. The remaining $32,000, or approximately 30%, is via a local levy authority that has been granted to the 131 school districts. By the way, that 30%, or $32 million, evolves from a public hearing process currently, and the current legislation also reflects a similar hearing requirement as well. I did mention already the 0.2% to ensure accountability and oversight by MDE, and that is consistent with the legislative auditor's report. We also want to create a fiscal model that's predictable over time and stable in two-year increments, which follows your biennium budget process. Finally, we want the percentages of allowable expenditures to be referenced in the statute, as they are in Senate File 711, that 80% of the revenue is spent on students. That was very important to the task force. 20% spent on professional development administration. And in no instance would a individual district's budget allow to spend more than 10% on administrative costs, including sometimes referenced travel expenses in this program. Again, the AMSD legislative platform places a high priority on the creation of integrated and equitable learning environments, and they recommend this committee give serious consideration to adopting the task force recommendations, which, again, is referenced in Senate File 711. As many of you have heard previously, I'm very passionate about AVID, Advancement Via Individual Determination. There are 31 school districts currently that have AVID programs in place, serving over 5,300 students. This program has definitely proven that we can close the achievement gap with a program of this nature, or the Young Scholarship Program, or Jobs for America's Graduates. Again, I want to emphasize the significance of AVID as an example of a program that's been successful in closing the achievement gap. Again, I want to thank you for your time this afternoon. I'm glad to be present again to share the work of the task force, the focus of the Legislative Committee of AMSD. And finally, just as a friendly reminder, that when integration equity was funded originally, Minneapolis and St. Paul were the primary focus, with approximately 70% of their students as students of color. Today, similar percentages exist, almost identical percentages exist in Columbia Heights, Worthington, Brooklyn Center, Richfield, and the following school districts have in excess of 40% students of color: West St. Paul, Burnsville, Bloomington, North St. Paul, Roseville, Onamia, Lynn, Wilmer, Osseo, and Robbinsdale, just to name a few. Thanks for your time today, and I just want to thank the chair for being a co-author on 7-Eleven, as I believe you are, and thank you, and thank Representative Carlos Mariani for authoring the bill in the House, and we appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. And we have one additional testifier and perhaps others, and then we'll open for questions.
Mr. Chairman, before Mr. Erickson leaves the chair, I also want to say thank you to him and the members of the task force. He stated in his testimony this is his seventh time. He spent multiple hours not just here in these buildings but also reviewing information and just leading remarkable efforts to bring people from different backgrounds, from different political affiliations, to come together to bring a report that is really remarkable. And most of the recommendations have been incorporated into this bill, but we're going to continue to need your efforts to implement it if this bill moves forward, because this is just the theory. Then we need to work on the practice. So thank you, Mr. Erickson, for
Senator,
your
thank
work.
You. And it was done on a bipartisan basis. 10 out of 12 members voted for the recommendations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have one more testifier. Hey,
Ms. Metzen, for mm-hmm. Slake Superintendent. Welcome to the committee.
Chairman Wieger and members of the Senate E-12 Education Finance Committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. My name is Linda Madsen, and I am the superintendent of Forest Lake Area Schools. Forest Lake is fairly new to the East Metro Integration District, with this being our third year as a member. In these three short years, we've seen the value this funding has brought to our students, parents, staff, and also community members. Our demographics have changed over the past few years, but certainly not as much as many in the state. Since 2002, the percent of students of color has gone from 3 to 8%. The percent of students eligible for free and reduced price lunch has gone from 12 to 24%. The number of students receiving special education services from 10 to 13%. And those students that are English learners have increased slightly from 0.38% to 1%. Integration funding helps provide experiences for students that they may not be part of without that integration funding. The opportunity for classroom partnerships has been a rich experience and one that teachers want to provide for their students. Having access to the Multicultural Resource Center provides needed resources, and being in collaboration and having leaders in our district interact with leaders in other districts in a purposeful and a focused way is beneficial to our families and to our students. Through our participation, we've been able to implement Reading Recovery, which focuses on first graders needing intense literacy intervention. We have had positive results even in the infancy of this program in Forest Lake. This program was made possible by our involvement in EMID and will continue to expand because of our involvement. Making reading a joy rather than a burden for any student, but particularly a first grader, is important work, and our integration dollars help us do that. We initiated an equity audit this year that would not have happened had it not been for integration funding. The audit is identifying gaps related to early literacy, which will then assist us in appropriate interventions and strategies to decrease and hopefully eliminate these achievement gaps. Besides gaps during a child's early grades, we are also identifying gaps in high school and looking at our participation and achievement in our college and the schools and advanced placement classes. Forest Lake has a robust CIS and AP program, and we are making sure that all students have access and that they can achieve success. The equity audit is also identifying the needs of staff and really of the district as a whole. We're attempting to be proactive and self-aware in our planning and also in our actions. As I was listing the percents of students of color, you may have been surprised at the low percentage, 8% in 2012. One of the areas that's been the most striking as far as the positive impact of integration funding has been our ability to hire cultural liaisons to work with students and with parents. It's truly a joy to attend the parent and or family meetings and see the excitement and appreciation from parents. Even though numbers are low compared to other districts, we are acknowledging that these students and families may need additional support, and we're providing it. The American Indian Parent Group has been instrumental in identifying families and students in our district and also providing staff development for our teachers and other staff members that has really been extremely well received. At our in-service in February, staff at one of our elementary buildings was part of a morning of cultural awareness and information that was eye-opening, fun, and positive. Word has spread quickly throughout the district, and requests have come in from other schools to replicate this experience. Our Hmong liaison and the Hmong student group have been parent-focused at first, and now the needs are shifting to a student-focused group at the secondary level. This group meets once or twice per month and partners with other service groups at our high school on a variety of school and community projects. Other liaisons work with individual families and students on specific topics. The goal of the work of the liaisons, the parent groups, the student groups, is decreasing the achievement gap, if one exists, and increasing student achievement, no matter what achievement level the student is experiencing. Personally, as a superintendent, meeting monthly with my colleagues who are part of EMID helps me focus on this work. I am challenged, I'm frustrated, I'm excited, I'm looking at things in new and deeper ways. I'm a better leader because Forest Lake is part of the East Metro Integration District, and I believe our students are better able to achieve success because of our partnership with these districts that comprise EMID. Thank you for allowing me to share some of our successes and the value we place on working with this collaborative.
Thank you, Superintendent Mattson. Okay, Senator Torres-Ray, any other testifiers before we open for questions?
I don't have any in my list,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
And Senator Torres-Ray, we mentioned the first engrossment. It has been distributed now, and if you had any additional comments you wanted to make on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that opportunity. Members, and again, the members of that serve in the policy committee are aware of these changes that were made during our last hearing of the policy committee. But briefly, I would like to review on section one, page two, line 2-1 and 2-2. As you remember, we expanded on the term for cultural fluency, incorporating cross-cultural interactivities, communication, and pedagogy to really bring that term to education, closer to education. On page 3, lines 3.3, we had an amendment to include a requirement for requiring longitudinal data must be based on student growth and progress towards proficiency in reading, math, and writing. That is new language. And then at the bottom, page 334, a process for a district to provide a report on outcomes and the district that did not meet the achievement goals established in section 24D. In the previous language, simply lost funding. In this, we incorporated a process for a report to the commissioner and giving that district the opportunity to establish growth for 2 years, because we thought that losing funding immediately after a year is really not a reasonable request. Districts probably would begin to see growth, but perhaps not at the percentage that we establish, and that we wanted to give them the time to establish that growth and measure that growth and present it to us. What we have not established is the percentage. There was an attempt to establish a 10% on line 4.4, I wanted to have a conversation about that particular percentage. I wanted to go higher, and I am proposing a 20% for this committee. And the reason, I believe, from an implementation point of view, is that I presume that a district could forego 10% of the funding and not actually present growth, because you could say, you know, it's okay to lose 10%. We have not been able to meet the established growth that we presented in our committee. A 20% would provide a greater incentive, and I believe is a prudent number. Yet, in terms of really establishing a percentage that that is consistent with regulations that the department establishes when they hold revenue, I have not had that conversation. So, members, that's for review, but that's
members,
where we're at.
Senator Torres Rey moves at line 4.4 that we insert 20 before percent. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that's a number that had not been established and is the only one. The other members, as you know, the three steps for establishing the actual numbers for this particular bill depend on three factors. One, setting the overall spending level, which current law establishes integration revenue as 93.4%. 28.5 being from levy. That's for fiscal year 13. And then for fiscal year 14, the appropriation is for $1.39 million with a 27.8 from levy. And then for fiscal year 15, the integration appropriation is only at 68% because we do not have the levy at that point. So the governor's proposal comes at a $92 million for the fiscal year 14, and $65.9 million for fiscal year 15. The issue, members, obviously for me as a district that has. That faces a significant challenge in terms of losing significant revenue in the process of adopting a new formula that is equitable for most districts, is that I would like to perhaps request that this committee looks at adopting a whole harmless provision that gives the districts that are about to lose more funding and the flexibility to incrementally go back into lower levels of funding for the future, because Minneapolis, my district, St. Paul, and Duluth will have a significant loss of revenue, about $11 million for my own district, which will be devastating for my district, and we need to figure out how do we get them back into, you know, really having a participate in a fair formula for everyone over time. And I understand that. I'm willing to work with the committee on that, but I would like to request the committee to look into a provision that helps them get there over time.
Senator Torres Rey, that's noted, and council will prepare a draft for future consideration on that. Senator Bonner.
Couple questions, Senator Torres Rey. As you suggested, your 20% amount of holdback for performance related, we're looking in the higher ed bill, you know, for doing performance funding and and doing the holdback as well. And one of the questions that has been brought to my attention is there has to be something written about what happens to that money. Do you want that money to go to the general fund? One of the things that we're looking at is we actually want the money directed to the activities around which we know would ultimately make a difference. So, for example, you could consider including some language that said if a district failed to meet its objectives, oh, I'm sorry, you did it. And
I was going to say, Senator, the next provision says what the money should be used for, and it actually goes to the districts to...
Right, but okay, so on that same point... If you're looking at it like those schools that didn't meet their goals, you actually have concerns about those kids. Right. And so if you take that money and you give it to the districts that did, you're leaving those kids. So I'm wondering if you would consider crafting language that would instead do something that we know works, like intervention strategies, extended day, one-on-one tutoring, something that actually serves the kids that are failing. So just something to consider, because whenever you take it away from a place where they're failing, somehow it makes them less, you know, able to succeed. That's just one idea. And then another question is, I think this not more than 10% to be used for administrative expenditures on line 4.24. I think 10% is way too high for using integrative fund revenue that's meant to close the achievement gap, because your administrators are already there. They're doing what they're doing. And I want this money to be direct to students.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonoff, actually, the amendment that I put together that I explain on line 3.34 is actually intended to address the very issue that you talk about. Because in the previous language, actually, the districts were going to lose money without having an opportunity to really do exactly what you just said, mm-hmm. which is present to the commissioner, well, we have this problem. What do we do about it? So now they have actually 2 years to do exactly what you said, because I think it was unfair to say, well, you reduce the funding and then, you know, we still have the problem. So they do have now, in this with this language, they have exactly the opportunity that you describe, and they have to work very closely with the commissioner. And that's another part that I think is imperative, is that we provide the commissioner the resources to hire the staff to work with them, because she's going to have some knowledgeable staff that can work with that particular district. You know, each district is very unique as to what their population and needs are. So we do have that provision now incorporated into the bill, and the assumption is that the districts will bring precisely that kind of proposal that you described. So that's with respect to that particular issue. The other issue that you describe about the 10% of this share for administrative expenditures, I am open to that conversation. I really... don't know, you know, what is fair. It could be that, you know, a smaller number is adequate. I don't know really what would be prudent, but I am totally open to your input on that.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, and just going back one more second, Senator Torres-Ray, to the idea that the district must submit then this two-year improvement plan, and I look over there at Senator Hoffman, and I know that he's put forward that compensatory proposal, which actually does hold, you know, the districts like yours harmless in terms of many other factors. But also we talked about his intervention strategies that are data-driven, research-based. So I just think, you know, we want to be careful not to reinvent the wheel if we know that there's these strategies that work. I just hope that we, you know, if the district didn't meet their goals, are they the right ones to be doing the two-year plan, or should there be more, a different kind of intervention? And that, this is something to consider.
Yeah, and I'm open, Senator, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff. I'm open, you know, Very definitely, you know, if there is some language that could strengthen that provision, because absolutely that's the intent of having that language in there, to precisely do give the districts, you know, kind of hands-on, what do you need to do? So I'm open if you have, if you feel that there is some language that could strengthen this provision, absolutely, I welcome that.
Okay. We have Senator Peterson and Senator Weber, and also for questions to other testifiers, this would be the time. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Torres-Ray, and if I could offer maybe the opposing viewpoint to Senator Bonoff's point regarding the siloing of the revenue in the paragraph. Actually, I would, especially in light of the really quality amendments that you took in the policy committee, I actually don't like defining what percentage needs to be spent anywhere. I think, you know, there's a, one of my favorite organizational management books is called First Break All the Rules, and it's become kind of conventional wisdom now, but you know, we've defined some really good outcomes. We've set some objectives here that are worthwhile. So I would rather not define exactly how they need to get there, but rather say get there, and we don't really care how you do it. And so I, you know, if they do it by somehow spending 15% technically on administration, the bottom line is they've obtained the achievement that they're after. And that's what we should be concerned about from a policymaking standpoint, not necessarily micromanaging their finance position. Now, I would agree with Senator Bonoff's point that 10% would traditionally be high for administering any program. I know Anoka Hennepin is well below that. But nonetheless, I think the overarching point is that we're defining outcomes that are worthwhile. And if they get there, great. And if not, then they have a problem, regardless of how they spent it and where they spent it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Reaction? I think that's a very valid point. You know, I think that's, I think some people are very concerned about the amount of administrative funding that goes into some of the educational activities. I presume this is why, you know, this language came up this way, and I know the intention here is to actually help with that. But I agree that, you know, ultimately we're going to have some significant provisions here to measure outcomes, and how they get there is up to them. And if they don't get there, you know, they will lose funding. So that's pretty significant, and I think that the language is there for that. So,
okay, thank you. It's called Break the Rules.
So first, we'll break all the rules.
Okay, good. Hey, Senator, you're going to hear more about that. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where was that when I was in school? Anyway, just a couple of things. First, Senator Torres-Ray, I thank you for bringing this legislation forward. Some weeks ago, the chairman graciously asked what I thought, and all this is, I do not have a background in education, and I said to him at that time, one of the things that was frustrating for me is, and I dealt with integration aides in particular, was that everyone wanted the money, but at least at that point, nobody seemed to be talking about the issues that had been raised by the legislative auditor's report. And so I thank you for addressing those issues, and I think it is time to do that. One of the schools in my Senate district was mentioned. It's the largest city in my Senate district, Worthington. You know, 11,000-12,000 people, probably a class size of a couple hundred or more. 20-some different ethnicities within at least the lower grades of that community. Obviously, as they deal with the issues that we're talking about here, their plan to meet it might be different than some of the school districts that have had testimony here that have many thousands. I mean, the logistics of it are different, even though they may fall within common percentage classifications. My question for you is, do you believe that this legislation offers, while we have to have, I think, the closing of the achievement gap, we have to have defined results, does it also give the school districts flexibility to respond with the different situations that each of them have?
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Weber, I believe it does. We, as you review the bill, there are three things that we intend to do with this bill. The first one is that we want to define achievement and integration. We want to say what it is. The second thing is that we want to continue to fund that. And the third thing is that we want districts to tell us how those activities are being implemented and whether or not they are making progress on achievement for these different populations. What we don't say in the bill is how do you get there. We just say we want you to get there. We will give you the resources. We will support you. We think that you should get there because we have some gaps in this state that we're not proud of, that we need to improve. And there is no provision in this bill that actually tells you how to get there. It does, though, I hope, that it gives the commissioner a little bit of more resources to work with these districts. And this is what we haven't had in the past, that districts are kind of on their own. And I think one issue that I've learned about cultural competency and diversity for the last 25 years is that we are learning from one another, that there are districts who have gone through this, who have implemented a lot of policies, ideas, models, and sometimes they worked and sometimes they didn't. And there is a lot of value on sharing resources and sharing ideas and sharing capacity. And I hope that through this process of assigning the commissioner to work with the districts, we give the districts that opportunity to connect with an entity that will have information about best practices. And then he or she can, you know, continue to work with the districts, continue to work with the superintendents at the local level, sharing those best practices and those experiences and saying, you know, this is how it works or it doesn't. But there is no Senator Weber, we're experimenting. You know, when I came to Minnesota 25 years ago, I went to school with 600 classmates to an ESL program, and there were only two Latinas in this program. All of the students were Laotian, Vietnamese, and Hmong. And there were only Mexican and myself as Latinos. And people cannot even imagine that that would be the truth in Minneapolis today. So things are changing in this state, and it requires that we provide a lot of flexibility to the states. You have a district, Worthington, it's a changing district. It's just a city that is, you know, every year you see the statistics, they look different.
Follow up, Senator Weber, and then Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Torres-Ray. And just one comment to Senator Bonhoff's question about the 10%. I have no idea what the right number is. The only thing I would state that we also have to remember that we as the state do tend to like to pile additional things on our administration within the school districts. And while they may be there anyway, they with consistently more and more reports, more things to do, more things to be responsible for, it isn't always necessarily possible them to physically accomplish all that. And so they do have to seek outside sources. And so and maybe the 10% is too high. Maybe it's too low. I honestly don't know. But I do think we need to keep that in mind as we talk about administration.
Thank you.
Sometimes we unfairly pile on top of them, I think.
We do. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, and I'm looking at Ms. Bielke's report here, so I don't know if she might want to answer this question for me. I notice on the student achievement slide.
Microphone. Senator Johnson, a little closer to the mic. Please.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Ms. Bielke, on your handout here at the student achievement, which is what we're all about here, 5-year MCA tracking by ethnicity and gender. It's on the second.
Yes, I have that. Yep.
Second
okay.
Page. I'm wondering if there's ever been a similar tracking for just low income versus high income. Without any reference to ethnicity or color.
Well, on our data charts, we do track by it's the free and reduced lunch price. So on the other data charts, it would be the. Let's see if I have a bigger one to look at too. The third set of data, RP, on. Like for the Anoka Middle School science charts, all those. FRP stands for free and reduced price lunch. So we do track those students as compared to the students as a whole. So we are following that. We in each of these, and they do not show up well on black and white, but in each of these subgroup or categories, it's all students. So it takes all it takes out the ethnic and the racial background, and it just puts all students into one group. So that's also in there. And I apologize, in black and white, it's hard to see, but it is available in color.
Okay, so that would, Mr. Chair and Ms. Bielke, so that then would tell me what the higher income, like people that are above the income level that qualify for free and reduced lunch. Do you make a comparison between that group of students versus all of the other people all together? Without reference to color or ethnicity,
we do not pull out and have. I'm sorry, we do not pull out just the students who are not on free and reduced lunch and run a report for them. We have not done that in the past. So when you look at our charts, the free and reduced lunch price are in the one group, and then they are part of the next group. So where the whole school would have both the free and reduced lunch price students and the non-free and reduced lunch price students.
Mr. Chair, and again, it's just something that throughout my years, even though it's been quite a long time since I've been here, but my years when I was in the House, I did a lot of thinking and thinking about whether it's poverty or whether it's color that makes the greatest distinction. And I'm tending to believe it's more about poverty as I grow a little older. And so I was wondering if there
wiser.
Would be anything
wiser.
Like that. Wiser. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, may I respond to that? Senator Johnson, I want you to know that during the interim, that's going to be the actual focus of my work, because I think that I can bring to you the statistics that show exactly the opposite. But I am not ready to put that before you. There is Minnesota presents today a very important opportunity, which is that we are seeing levels of poverty increasing in rural community like we have never seen before.
Correct.
So that we are able now to track poverty in a very different way and connect poverty to academic achievement without incorporating race. We didn't used to have that, so we do now because of the economy. Though what we do know, so my intent, and I've been working with the department of this, it's been pretty complicated to actually put together numbers that speak to income and then connect them to numbers that speak to achievement. But that's work that we need to do. The other piece that we also need to do, Senator Johnson, is begin to really focus our conversation not only on race and income, but also high concentration and what that does to a family that is part of a community where no resources are available. In Minnesota, we have very interesting phenomenons where you see high concentration of poverty and low levels of access to resources. And you also see high concentration of opportunity and high access to resources. And that speaks to the city and rural. So there are a lot of variables that you can analyze in order to understand the whole issue of academic achievement, economic background, race and ethnicity, and actually geographic isolation. So it's interesting work, and I hope that we're able to do more work during the interim to bring that to you.
Ms. Bielke.
I'd like to respond if possible. I don't have data to show you, but one of our school districts, which is the Rockford Area Schools, they have a lower percentage of students of color. I think it's around 9%, but they are approaching 30% students who are in poverty. And what we see in their data is that there is a difference between the students who are in poverty and their non-students who are you know, middle class or above. And yet this programming does help them put innovative instruction with all their students. So they're seeing a positive growth on those students also. And so I think if you talk to various ones of our superintendents, and they could answer that with more authority. But I think all of the educators would agree that there is a connection between poverty and achievement, and sometimes the racial part is irrelevant and sometimes it's relevant. So it kind of depends on where they're at. Thank you.
Further questions of any of the testifiers? And I believe, Senator Torres-Ray, you made reference to the Department of Education and whether you were asking for their comment, or I'll let the author decide if you'd like that for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it would be good for us to kind of hear, part of what the recommendation, I think, is good
but
for you
very
to
very succinctly,
review.
And we've heard it, but if you just needed something for the record on that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Education. This was another one of the task force I worked with, and it was a pleasure. They were very diligent about their work. Governor's budget obviously preceded. We put that together at the beginning of the session. And we, too, in the governor's bill, have some language on integration funding. In fact, and also the policy surrounding it. It parallels very much what you see in Senator Torres-Ray's bill and also what the Representative Mariani has in the House. We go at it a slightly different way. If you want to review it, it's kind of on pages 43 of the governor's bill, but I'll try to succinctly describe how we approach it. We try to pattern it after the task force report. What we did with the policy part of it is we parallel the issues, the uses of the funding very closely to what Mr. Erickson laid out and what's in this bill. They're very close to being identical. We approach the implementation a little bit differently. We ask that the school districts, for use of these dollars, identify measurable goals, number one. Number two, that they then align their budget with those goals. Number three, that they have to, and it has to be a detailed budgeting, they then have to establish specific criteria with valid and reliable measures for determining whether they've met those goals. Number four, they'd have to then outline a process for evaluating whether they've met those goals. They then have 3 years to implement their plan, and then fundamentally they would be held accountable for meeting those goals. We also require that they have a public hearing, which is similar to what is in the other bill. They also must put this plan on the website for the public to review and look at. And so we just have a slightly different approach on how we go forward. The uses are very similar. We've had some contact from some out-state districts, greater Minnesota districts, about increasing the way to reach racial diversity within their districts, especially when they're more isolated. And so we've looked at some language along that line. The commissioner also is, although it's not in the governor's bill, we've had conversations with Senator Torres-Ray about withholding of dollars should they not meet their goals. The commissioner is open and willing to accept that. She takes, I would suggest a slightly different approach. We withhold the 20% of funding and then work with the school district for a period of time and try to help them reach the goals. Our purpose here is to have the kids succeed. So we don't necessarily remove the money from the district. We have an interim step where we would ask that the district, under a plan directed by the commissioner, use those dollars in a directed plan to help them reach their goals. So other than that, it's quite similar in structure and intent, and we appreciate all the work that the senator has done. I have been doing some number running here for her on which districts are impacted. It's surprising. My kids went through Minneapolis Public Schools when they were under court-ordered desegregation. So as a parent, I went through that period. Now we have many more kids of color and ethnicities. And I said to the senator, we better make sure this plan works for the next 10 to 15 years, because at that time our student population is going to be very different, and it's going to be a majority of the kids that are students of color. So we thank you for this opportunity to share what we have put in our bill, and we support the concepts that are moving forward.
Thank you, Ms. Hermanson, and for, again, the reference to the task force, which has provided through the commissioner's office a lot of the recommendations we're looking at. We will lay 7-11 over for possible inclusion, as amended, for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And we thank the testifiers and others for their participation. And for update, we meet tomorrow. We meet Thursday. I believe every bill that has asked to be heard, some have not been asked for hearing, I understand. But then we're going to be running out of time. The goal is to have the omnibus draft by Monday of next week. We're hoping that's the case. As you know, we go through a review of all the various bills. We also, and this is, you know, staff has got the lion's share of work right now in terms of, you know, doing runs on district. Remember when I asked, does anyone feel they're being treated fairly in financing? No, it's the other ones. But, you know, so we're looking at different runs, the way that would work. And I reiterate that if there's a particular provision that you may be thinking of amending but would like to look at some additional language now, I have met with at least a few of you on that and trying to come up with some better language, please let me know. My cell phone is 651-770-0283. But I encourage you to do that, and we'll do our very best. And if there's, you know, questions, or, you know, during the next few days as the bill's being prepared, please let me know. And then, of course, it'll be open for the discussion and for amendments, et cetera, but maybe we can perfect it prior to that, to the extent we reasonably can. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know you're trying to wrap it up here. I just have a question for staff. There's in subdivision 2 on line 3, there is a couple of factors there that determine the distribution of integration revenue to districts. One is a per pupil factor, and then the other is a factor of the concentration of qualified students in the district. Number one, did we define what those numbers actually were in this committee hearing? Yeah. I was out of the room, so Chair, I apologize.
Chairman, Senator, those have not been defined. Part of the issue is it's almost more appropriate to start with the overall funding level and then determine the other factor, if there's a hold harmless and at what percent. And then those allowances can be set from there. And it kind of based on those decisions, that's kind of how it works out.
Okay. Well, one of the things just to make this, you know, concern public is there's been some districts, and I appreciate and respect your point that every district doesn't feel like they're treated equitably, but within the compensatory program, as you know, there's a concentration factor there, and the distribution of funding to districts based upon the numbers that have yet to be filled in, I think, is a significant factor, you know, in the decision that especially suburban and rural members in particular will have regarding whether or not this truly is equitable. I appreciate, Senator Torres-Ray, you bringing a bill forward that maybe isn't in the best interest, at least financially, parochially for your district. But nonetheless, it's important information for those members in particular. And then if I could ask staff to indulge me in just telling me, whenever you decide what the global number is for integration, what the difference would be proportionately if you were to just do it on a per pupil basis rather than using both factors in combination. So one of the arguments has been in compensatory for a long time is that some people would like to just see a free and reduced lunch kid as a free and reduced lunch kid regardless of concentration. I'd like to see what those numbers look like as it relates to integration as well, just so that members know, you know, that there are many ways that you can slice this thing, that and those things matter a lot financially for our districts. That's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And that's noted. Yeah, Sarah Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had similar comments to Senator Peterson in that we put this through the policy committee, and it's standard procedure. We'll send bills through with dots instead of dollar figures or breakdowns. And I'm And I understand we're not moving this bill today, but I am a little less comfortable in the Finance Committee having an overview on a bill that is going to make a significant difference. I don't want to press it to the point of filling in numbers in these blanks here, but I do want to get on the record that I am a little less comfortable reviewing a significant piece of legislation that doesn't have those details in there that will then come up later, presumably in the omnibus bill. And part of that is that without these numbers, staff can't do runs. And without runs, it's harder for me to parse and break down what the implications are. Now, I presume that, you know, Senator Torres-Ray, I'll give you credit. I mean, this is probably not going to be real beneficial for your school district, but I don't know what that means across the board and what the change is relative to what the current scenario is. And those are challenges that we have as members in the committee to try to make judgments. And it's going to be a little more challenging when we get the omnibus bill and the numbers are filled in. And we may, I guess I'm just setting the expectation that we may have some requests for some different variations of different runs just to be able to make some comparisons and look at current world versus different permutations. I don't know what those might be. It's just hard to do when we have a bill that, for all practical purposes, is a policy bill in front of the Finance Division.
It's noted in staff will continue to do their very best to accommodate options. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Nino and members. I, you know, absolutely, this was, Jay and I were meeting for a long time today in my office to run all of these scenarios, and it was very difficult for me to assign him to run all the scenarios that you could possibly ask for. So I encourage also the members to ask specific questions, because I know he's there willing to work with us to kind of move into presenting different tables that show different scenarios. But I do feel uncomfortable myself to not have, that type of information in front of you in the Finance Committee, but it was an issue of, really being able to handle all of those numbers and put all of the possible scenarios that came to mind as we met.
Thank you, Senator Torres-Ray. In closing, I'd like to wish our legislative assistant for the committee, Caitlin Snyder, a happy birthday today. And any words of wisdom, Ms. Snyder?
So far today, you guys are welcome to try and top this. My favorite present has been pepperoni bread that my grandmother up in Roseau sent home with me over Easter. So that's up in 205 if there's any left.
Thank you very much. And members, thank you for your thoughtful participation. We'll see you tomorrow. We're adjourned.